not who you think I am. I would like to say I don't breathe. I would like to say I never been. I would like to say I'm made of armor. I would like to say I don't give in.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 34 of Bedroom Beethoven's, the podcast where I sit down, look music producers in the eye, and ask them about their aspirations, their failures, their triumphs, and their relationships with life. This week I sit down with Grammy Award-winning producer Courtney Orlando, formerly known as JR. After taking a break from social media for 18 months, he is on the cusp of releasing new music. I thought now would be the perfect time to get his take on what's been going on with him, and we get candid on how he has persevered through a lot of strife, but with the support of his family and the multitude of talented people he surrounds himself with, including God, it's the level of love and faith that has brought him here with me this week. After all, the greatest musicians creating the greatest music of all time generally are born out of great struggle. Hey everyone, thanks for leaving me an Apple Podcast review this week. Thank you if you've just added a view to the total amount or a download to my total. It means a lot. I appreciate you. But don't forget, I do have a Patreon, patreon.com/bedroombeethovens. You can support the show for as little as $2, and the website is bedroombeethovens.com, where you can explore the show archives, or you can even send me an email. And the Lamont Landers Band is going to tell you what podcast you're tuned into.
It's the Bedroom Beethoven Podcast.
First off, sadly, I know the original time didn't work out, but I think any man who wants to get on the mic 9 a.m. on a Monday, that's a friend of mine.
Yo,
I don't know if it's work ethic or if you're a morning guy or what, but I like it, hitting it hard first thing.
Nah, I am a morning guy. Yeah, I'm a little bit of both, but I am a morning guy. You know, nice work for me too, but it's, you know, I got kids, so it's like at a certain time, they go to bed at 8:30. So I was able to dip off because the wife had them, you know what I mean? I'd be good, but.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to have this opportunity to speak with you. Last week I had an episode with Brian Owens.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's the man right there.
He's the man. Absolutely.
What kind of started out as a conversation about music, man, we winded down the road to discuss Michael Brown, of course, and the tragedies that happen where you guys live. And he really helped instill in me how a wonderful community, not just St. Louis or Ferguson, but all of Missouri has to offer, despite the preconceived notions that outsiders might have based on what happened there 5 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, man. You know, the news, the media is definitely one-sided and biased in a lot of ways. And you know, they did an excellent job capturing, you know, the chaos. But very few do a good job of capturing what Ferguson, you know, is really known for, what it was like before that, and the beauty that's in it.
Yeah, it's great for me because I know there's a lot of parallels there, because I know a few years ago, whether when you were recording Brother Song or the music you've been making since, it's really crazy because it's not only music that people can vibe out to, but the songs can take on more meaning depending on how personal the message is to whoever's listening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. So true.
So how connected to Missouri are you? Have you been there your whole life?
Yeah, man. Yep. St. Louis is home for me, man. I've been here all my life and moved away when I was younger. For about 3 years, I was in Texas. My old man got a gig out there. So was there for like 3 years and then moved back. But I've been here ever since. And so, you know, thank God I get a chance to travel abroad and see the world and, you know, and work out of other cities and still be able to come back home and call, you know, St. Louis, my place of residence.
I'm in Texas right now. What part were you in?
Where were we at, man? We were in Dallas, but
it's a big state.
It is, man. But I forgot where it's. I know it's a pastor out there, a guy named Tony Evans. I know we were like 10-15 minutes from his church. So that's the only thing I can remember.
So
I stayed in the street called Los Mirage. That's the only thing I know.
Can you, I'm curious about the home life there, because I know the murder of Michael Brown, it happened, what, a few blocks from where you lived?
Where it happened was about 10 minutes from me, but it was a few blocks from where Brian lived at. So, I mean, it was just literally, you know what I'm saying, two or three minute drive for Brian, but it was about 10 minutes from me. But, you know, I grew up in Ferguson. Grew up in Berkeley and Florissant. Those are all surrounding municipalities that are at least the minutes away from each other. So all of the, I mean, that whole, where it all went down at was my stomping grounds as a young dude.
It's just like, you know, I'm listening to the audio journals and I hear about like the car accident, the health issues. And it's just funny how literally it takes you to the brink of death to realize your purpose. Like it might be the most revealing way to figure it out. Like I remember...
Yeah.
50 Cent said, you know, he got shot along with somebody else. He got hit the same way he got hit, but he was still breathing. So he thought that there was like a greater reason for him to be there. And I don't think people give you enough credit to be able to be so optimistic and pull a positive out of that situation.
Now it's clear that I'm here for a real reason, because he got hit like I got hit, but he ain't breathing. Many
people would call it a day and give up.
Man, brother, like you just said, you said something, and it's funny. That makes me want to go listen to that album again. But you just said something that is what motivates me to keep going. Like to know, because not only did I have a heart attack, like so after I had my heart attack, a year after I had my heart attack, my best friend had a heart attack, but he died from his. You see what I'm saying?
Mr. Eric Brown, God rest his soul.
Eric Brown, yeah, you know what I mean? And then my cousin, I had a cousin named Luke Carlton, and he was 33, you know what I mean? This dude died from a heart attack. So when I tell you, like, man, and you know, I done had two of them, and I'm still here, that's a blessing. And so, you know, so people who've had heart attacks, and that was their last one. So now I've been graced with the ability or the knowledge to know what condition my heart is in. And even though I'm in good physical shape, even when I had them, it's just hereditary. You know what I mean? So, yeah, man, it's crazy. You're right. Like two things can happen. The same thing can happen to two people, two different outcomes.
Yeah. Out of the blue, heart attacks are like now, because, you know, everyone's conditioned to believe heart attacks can only happen to unhealthy people. But out of the blue, heart attacks are like my new fear.
Right.
You know, I know.
No, absolutely. And that's where, like, you know, this album, these audio journals, my journal, like those auto audio journals, those aren't just stuff I'm just saying, like, you know, off the blue. Those are stuff that are in pages of my journal where, like, literally, like I couldn't sleep because of the voices in my head. The thoughts in my head was like, yo, you're not going to wake up tonight. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, Dirty, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, get ready, get your will in order, Dirty, because you leaving this world soon, like your partners. And so I had to journal. I just had to write down. I'm talking to God like, man, like, this is crazy. Your mortality, bro. When you come face to face with your mortality, it does something to you. And I am grateful. So I'm in the middle of it. I ain't gonna act like I've conquered the fear of death. Like I've conquered, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm all is well. No, my mind, that was traumatic for me. So my mind is still battling those lies that say you ain't gonna be around. So I'm balancing the truth of my faith in God that he was preserving me, and the truth of that, man, I got a bad heart. I mean, I got cardiovascular disease. Like, you know what I mean? My father passed that down to me. My mama passed that down to me. So that's a reality I live in. But you're right. My drive is not to be captivated by fear, but by a beautiful future, love, and, the loved ones that God has given me to steward. So, yeah, man, that's a good point.
Well, at the time, those audio journals, they were just something you did to get you through the moment. They were never going to be promotional tools. It just happened that way.
Absolutely. Yep, it just happened that way. And as I've been thinking about this album, the album would be done in about a month. And I'm like, yo, I'm not ready. I took a year and a half hiatus away from social media. And, coming back, I'm like, man, like, I can't just hop on this mud like nothing happened. Like, I'm not the guy I was when I left. Like, some things have changed. And so what I'm doing is just trying to be authentic as I come back to social media, that I'm not just hopping on the gram, taking pictures of, like, you know what I'm saying, my food or like my shoes, all that silly stuff that we kind of, you know, find ourselves doing. But I'm like, I got to come back and just tell people where I've been at. You know what I mean? And so I'll get to the stuff where I'm you know, document my vacation, or I'm in the studio with somebody, or I'm performing somewhere. But right now, I'm just trying to fill people in on where I've been.
I wanted to get into that, the social media absence, because that's very fascinating. But you just mentioned something about fear. I read that the man that was responsible for Emmett Till's death put a gun to your uncle.
Yes, put a gun to my uncle. That is crazy. Yes. My granny told me that story, man, about a few years ago, and I was like, wow.
So, Emmett Till's death happened in Mississippi. Was this interaction in St. Louis, or was this in another part of the
world? No, it was in Mississippi. No, I was in Mississippi. That's where my grandparents are from.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm. They were, they were sharecroppers.
Oh, yep. Wow.
And so my uncle at the time was, you know, a teenager. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like we're... I don't know. I was trying to wrap my head around that. And it's like, you know, we're still kind of going through the white privilege stuff. It might not be like the Jim Crow era, but it's still alive and well. Like Felicity Huffman getting 14 days in jail for the admission scandal, which if that was any other race, that would have been goodbye freedom.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Absolutely. They would have did at least some months or to a year in that thing. I was like 14. I said, come on, man. It's got to be some type of joke. I'm 14 days. That sounds like something that you give somebody just so you can say them you gave them some type of time, but you really didn't want to give them nothing. You know what I mean? That's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I knew about the tragedy of Emmett Till. What I didn't know is that his killers went on to live in their 70s and into their early 80s, and they led a life of hate, pulling guns out on people, and they were free men.
Yeah, we got a lot of work to do. I mean, it's still a lot of, you know, still a lot of evil out here. There's still a lot of, you know, a lot of hate, man. A lot of hate.
Well, your uncle escaped that incident unharmed. It was just like, it was just a fearful incident, but he.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. He was all good.
And you mentioned your father passed on kind of like this genetic thing. He passed on around the same age as my own father. So like, man, researching you, I was like, man, I was kind of looking at my own mortality. Was his unexpected as well?
Yes and no. So my father's been about having health issues for a number of years, but he had a quadruple bypass. I think he was about, may have been 52 or something, or 51. And then this, before this last heart attack he had that took him out of here, he had a heart attack. I was in Japan and he had a heart attack. He didn't want to tell me. And I came back from Japan and I was like, Pops, what's going on? He was like, yeah, I didn't want to worry you. You know, he was like, yeah, it was just, you know, some blockage, yada, yada, yada. So, my father was a musician as well and a songwriter. So he had some songs. And I was like, all right, I'm back now. Next week, let's get in the studio and let's start cranking out these songs that you've written one by one. And that next, we couldn't even make it to that next week. That Sunday, while I was at church, I started getting all these text messages and phone calls telling me to get to my old man crib. Yep. But yeah, man. So it was unexpected because we didn't know. Of course, you know, you can't predict when that's going to happen, but we knew his body was weak. We knew that these heart attacks, you know, were problems dealing with the cardiovascular disease was not getting any better. And my old man, he was like, he kind of old school. He was, you know, the dude was still eating peach cobbler and fried chicken and all types of crazy stuff. You know what I mean? I'm like, bro, you know what I mean? So I'm kind of like, I see a lot of myself in him too. And like, I ain't been to the gym in a year and a half. So I'm like, and I've been working out for the last 15 years. So I'm like, man, I gotta lock it down.
Well, was he the type of person who took pride in Ferguson as well? Like, was he a good member of the community?
My father lived in the city of St. Louis, probably about 20 minutes from Ferguson. But my father was one of those people who were very known in his community as well. So, you know, everybody knew him. They knew he was a hard worker. They always saw him building, adding onto his house, working on his garden, helping people out. And plus, he was a pastor in the community that he lived. So, yeah, people, they knew he had love for the city.
Just like Brian Owen's dad. A lot of parallels.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, man. Yeah.
It's crazy. I know it's a generational thing, but I feel like if my father had a heart attack, he wouldn't tell me either because he wouldn't want me to worry. And like I got two daughters. I know you have three kids, and I would want to be as transparent with them as possible because you never know, and life is short.
Never know. Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
That's crazy. And, you know, you told me you inherited something musically from them. So, you know, music's probably always been in your life, but now you're a teenager and you meet you meet Brad Young. Was that just a friendship that led to learning how to produce, or were y'all like friends first and then music kind of came second?
Yo, this crazy that you know this much about me, bro. That's kind of scary. That's
hey, it's my job. I don't get paid to do this, but it's my job to research a little bit.
Nah, that's dope. That's dope. Yeah, so Brad, it's funny. I just got the phone with him not too long ago because I just came from the studio mixing my single that I'm releasing this Friday. But I met him. Sure, we were like 14, you know what I mean? And we were both, we were living in a municipality called Berkeley, where me and all my homeboys are from. And I think we met because we was fighting. Like me and my homeboys was banging with his homeboys. He wasn't fighting. We got off the school bus and we just started fighting. We ended up making up with those guys. And then once we made up with them, you know, Brad was a friend. And so when I met Brad, I was like, at this time, I was 14. So I had one mission. I was baseball, two mission, baseball and trying to smash anything walking. So, you know, I was just like girls, 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 girls. And so that's how I met Brad, because he was a ladies man. So I was like, bro, teach me the secret, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? How I get chicks. So that's how I met Brad. And then we started playing the piano, trying to singing around and playing around. And one thing led to another. And we ended up teaching each other how to produce, taught ourselves how to write, taught ourselves how to compose, sharpened our ear, and we just, you know, we developed a lifelong, like a brother-like relationship, man. So, you know, he's Grammy nominated. He's produced for Yo Gotti, Mali, Bone Thugs and Harmony, some big name dudes. And so, yeah, he's that's my homeboy.
Isn't it crazy how things can develop out of like juvenile origins? Like when Facebook started, it was just to rate girls on campus, and now it's this billion-dollar empire. You never know.
Uh-huh. Never know. You never know. Yeah, man. Yeah.
I hear that Brad Young is quite notorious for being picky in who he works with. Miley wanted to work with him originally when her career got started, and he said no.
Yeah.
She had to do a lot of chasing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is their second round working together, and they've developed a chemistry over the years that's super dope. But yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And I'm the same way, too. Like, we both got high standards, and not because, you know, we think we the ish, but it's just like when you spend this much time crafting, developing your craft over the years, you have an affinity for excellence. And so, you know, like we want to rock with people who are going to bring out the best in us and us helping to bring out the best in them. And so, but Miley, she's the truth. She's also featured on my album dropping soon too.
Yeah. Very cool. I'm a big fan of all those people, everyone that you invite in the room. And I'm, you know, that's why I wanted to get you out here. Cause I'm a fan of everybody that you surround yourself.
Oh, that's what's up. Yeah. Dope.
So as you are currently venturing kind of on this truth of God's promises, you know, reigning true in your mind and in your heart, do you feel that your past successes, whether it was winning a Grammy or getting placements, shine, clout, money, was that knocking you out of balance? Or did you maybe, I don't know, I'm like, do you view your past successes as vices?
So yes and no. So I would say no in regards that my success and the places I've been, the rooms I've been in, the people I've met, the money I've made, the connections I've made, that's never been an idol for me. And I can contribute that to some homeboys that I've known that actually gave me my first record deal. So my first record deal was to a label called Cross Moving Records out of Philadelphia. But they taught me. They was like, yo, man, this fame, all this stuff, man, that was like, it's a facade. Like, they was like, man, be true to this, be true to yourself. Be true to God and you good. Like everything else is a facade. So I knew going into the game that stuff wasn't attractive to me. You know what I mean? Like, of course, I always like want people to like your stuff and, you know, I mean, feeling yourself a little bit. I mean, all of that pride, that's going to meet everybody who's successful is going to meet some level, have to fight some level of pride. But for me, where I would say where my success hurt me was finding identity not in the things but also like in this alter ego named JR, now Courtney Orlando. But you learn to like you live in this world where it's like, oh, I'm an artist, I'm a producer, this is what I do. And then, but it turns into, this is who I am, right? And so when you don't have, something happens in your life, like a heart attack, car accident, something, or depression, and this person that you are so used to being, when you can't be that person anymore, like for me, that's been the hardest adjustment to make, because it's like, I want to be that guy who saw the world before all of this traumatic loss. I want to be the guy, you know, before I was jaded or before I had so many years in the business. And, you know, I forgot to give myself permission to be human, to say, man, like, issues going to happen and stuff is going to change. But these are the things that we want to focus on. These are things we want to continue to cultivate. So I think right now I'm learning how to deal with my imperfections. I'm learning how to deal with loss. I'm learning how to deal with the rawness of who I am, for good and bad, and be okay with that.
You were able to push the noise away for 18 months. How did that impact your philosophy on how you perceive art now?
Yo, I mean, so, you know, you sit back, right? And, I've been in the game for a minute. So you sit back, and one of the things that I've been in such awe over is, I remember David Bowie, before he passed, he did an interview, I think it was Rolling Stones, and they asked him, like, who are you listening to? Who's got next? Like, what's inspiring you? And out of all the musicians and the genres in the world, this guy said hip hop. And they asked him, why'd you say hip hop? He said, because those guys are creating the most authentic art that there is right now. And what he was saying is that when you get, you know, young ladies and young men, you know, who will come from poverty, from the worst situations, but yet they're making the songs that even country singers are singing right now. He was saying that those people are coming from a place where all they got is their art. All they got is their craft. They're not thinking about money for the most part, at least when they start. Like, these people are using Fruity Loops. They're using a crappy PC, and they're creating hits that the whole world is singing. And so as I've been sitting back and watching it, I'm like, yo, like, one of the things I underestimated is how less polished my work has to be. Right. So I think for me, I'm so used to having a polished work, being a perfectionist, studying a track and just spending so much time on it and tweaking lyrics and hi-hats. And then when you see some of the stuff that come out, and it's like, it's a 808, a kick drum, snare, hi-hat, and probably some melody or that's something in the background that's just barely there. And a mic, a lead vocal that sounds like they recorded in their mama basement or something. And it's raw, unfiltered, and you get it and you feel it. And so for me, I've been looking at how I come back and looking at the rest I've taken from it. It's like, one, when I come back, I know that I can be authentically me, and it don't have to be polished and all together. And then the second thing I learned was how much of myself to give to social media. Because right now, clout chasing, a lot of people is on that. Social media, IG, Facebook, name of the game is a stunt, fake it until you make it. But I'm at a place right now, I'm like, man, bro, I'm good on all of that. This is who I am, and I'm going to try to give you me as authentically that I can. You take it or leave it. So now I know how much of myself, or at least I have a better idea of how much of myself to give to social media, to my supporters, to my fans, rather than just trying to be something that I'm not, or trying to win people over, we know, with certain tactics. Now I can just be me.
But as someone who has put in the 10,000 hours to build your legacy, who has, you know, you're at the top of the mountain, you have Grammy nominations, everybody wants to work it with you. You have the luxury to do that. Timbaland can go away and not have a hit for 8 years, or Scott Storch can go away,
yes,
and have the luxury to come back. You always said that the product itself is the best branding for a producer, but how does that work exactly in a fickle industry that values what have you done for me lately?
That's a good question. So, what I've learned is, part of me has transitioned, or a part of me has kind of opened up and started experimenting with new things. Excuse me. So I've been teaching. So I taught at a college for a year and a half. I taught music, composition, taught songwriting. I taught artist development. I taught digital media. So what that's done with me is showed me that no matter how raw you are, no matter how new you are, no matter how dope the fresh boy on the scene or the fresh girl on the scene, there's something that's indispensable and something that cannot be replaced. It's something called experience. And so no matter how many talented young people I run across, what they lack because of this thing called time is experience. So what I've learned is that you can't, like, you know, I'm not trying to be out here and be 25 again, you know what I mean? Be 21 again. But what I can do is bring a version of me that takes my experience, but also takes the sauce that the young people are giving right now. And I'm still a part of that sauce movement. Like, I ain't no old head who don't know what's popping. So what I do is I kind of take that and then I use the experience to give an experience that says, man, like, this sound like somebody who been making music all their life, but it sound raw enough that a 14-year-old can rock with it. You know, that an 18-year-old, 20-year-old can rock with it. Especially when it comes to production and building bodies of work. And that's another thing. That's a lot of bedroom producers, and no shade, you know, because, you know, I consider myself a bedroom Beethoven, but it's a lot of people who only make beats in a bedroom, but they can never hold a session with songwriters, musicians, and an artist and create a song from start to finish or an album from start to finish. So what comes with experience is A&R. I've A&R'd two records. More than that, if I'm counting my own, you know, I've been executive producer for a number of records. And so I can produce a record from start to finish, you know what I mean, without bringing in another producer, period. And I think that is, you can't replace that, you know what I mean? So that experience is a game changer when you're talking about bigger bodies of works and a 10,000 foot view that says, hey, let's take this out, put this here, this worked, this does it.
Bedroom Beethoven is, for me, is just a clever podcast name. But if you're a true Bedroom Beethovens, you're from a place where you think, hey, traditional sessions, there's a lot of value still left in that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man. Listen, like so it's amazing. My students, you know, they got all the sauce in the world. You know what I'm saying? And the hi-hats and the snares, rim shots, and the 808s is crazy. But if I was to say, oh, okay, so if Beyonce wanted to take this song and then change this, add strings, put a break right here, and then add a vamp or experiment with a bridge, like, how would you do that? You know what I mean? Like, if she wanted something, you know, trap mixed with a Motown era, how would you do that? They wouldn't know how. The only first thing they'd do is Google and then start sampling or go to Splice to find loops. You know what I mean? So I think it's, like, I don't want to hate on what comes from, like, Metro Boomin. I got much respect for Metro Boomin. He's crazy. He's a legend in his own right. And he has an ear for hits. But I've yet to see him cultivate an artist outside of a rapper. So I'm waiting for the bedroom producer to start having the value that says, hey, like, and I'm sure he does now. He understands the value because he's been in the industry and been in rooms with Pharrell and Kanye and people who know how to do that. But yes, knowing how to take a session, take a song from start to finish, be in a room with session writers, session players, telling them what to play, telling them, giving them keys and notes and melodies from your own mind. Like, that is priceless. And if you can tap into that, as well as, you know, what comes with this wave that's popping now, like, you would be a force to be reckoned with.
I feel like if I was interviewing a music producer who had an ear for hits, they wouldn't be able to extract that. I need to talk to somebody who was in a group like High Society or that was building a buzz for themselves back in 2007.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a different time.
Different time, man. Different time. But, you know, no hate. Like, you know, I'm not going to be one of those guys who, like, man, these young dudes, they don't know what they're doing. They skinny jeans. You know what I'm saying? They mumble rap. Nah, because I got my 16-year-old, my nephew who lived with me. And so I bounce stuff off him. I'm like, what you think about this? You know what I mean? He'd give me feedback on the songs because he got his ear is locked in to what's popping right now. But I remember, like, Bone Thugs and Harmony, you know what I'm saying? UGK, you know what I'm saying? Like, those are people we would listen to. And back then, hip hop dudes was like, man, these dudes trash. You can't even understand what they saying. They country. You know what I mean? So I dare not hate on what's popping now. Because I know it's the way for this generation. So I learned how to get in where I fit in, you know what I'm saying, and compliment what I can compliment. Hopefully, you know, I can take what's popping now and use it to compliment what I do.
Yeah, my 8-year-old daughter, it's all about Post Malone right now. So that's where we're at.
Yes. Oh, my Lord. Yeah, I got my 7-year-old daughter. That girl get in the room and all she wanna listen to is, Daddy, can you put it on Sunflower? I'm just like, no.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Yeah. Well, I have a kind of a selfish question. I don't know how many people listening are going to want the answer to this, but as someone who's produced for a multitude of, like, Christian artists, can you walk me through how that works? Because if I'm an atheist, let's say, are Christian artists going to want to work with me? or am I not going to understand the synergy of what's going on in the studio to either make great music or connect with the artist unless you're vibing spiritually?
Yeah, yeah. That's good, man. That's a good question. Excellent question. I would say it depends on who the Christian artist is. So as I mentioned, I was signed. My first two records, my first record deal was through a label called Cross Movement Records, but they were also the biggest Christian hip hop group in the world at the time, and they were called the Cross Movement. If we were back in those times, then they, their philosophy and Christian rappers or artists that, you know, took the same philosophy would say that they desire to only work with Christian artists because the content that they wanted to display, it was almost like the saying that how can two walk together unless they agree? So the synergy that you talk about, the philosophy that they came from was like, I only want to make music with people who identify with the truths that I am spitting because of that synergy desire. The other philosophy is that, and this is where I lean, I make music. So it's a saying, I forgot who quoted this, but it says, I would partner with anyone to do good and with no one to do evil. Right. That's the philosophy I take. So if we're talking about, so I got Mali on my project, you know, I got my homeboy Mastermind from St. Louis on my project. And I don't know their spiritual stance, but we do differ in some of our, you know, content. But that's OK, because if we can find good to partner on and to display that good, then so be it. So that may be love. That may be beauty, you know, in the world. That may be truth. That may be social justice. That may be just a vibe. It may be, you know, the love of a woman, love of a man, whatever it is. I find that good is within the world. And I'm like, let's partner and talk about this. Cause and my belief is that all good things come from God, right? So if you're an atheist, you may not believe that, but you enjoy and still can relate to love. You can relate to being loved, to wanting to love. You can relate to having a mother, a father. You can relate to being lost. You can relate to having money. You can relate to wanting to be successful. You can relate to being in the grind, being on the grind, being in the studio, the vibe. You know what I'm saying? If you get high, you can relate to that. It was whatever. So it's so many things that the Christian can relate to someone who doesn't share their core beliefs and still keep that synergy. It just depends on your philosophy. You know what I mean? And so for me, I think that saying wraps it up for me. I would partner with anyone to do good and with no one to do evil. So if what we're promoting and is makes the world a better place, then I'm Gucci. But if you want some stuff that's making the world a worser place, then I don't want to be a part of it.
I love that, man. That was the answer I was hoping to hear. And when you came back from hiatus, I know that maybe there was a fear that maybe too much time had passed or people wouldn't invest in your music or care. But let me put all that to rest, man. People are glad you're back. I'm excited about the new music.
Right on.
And I really learned a lot just listening to your story, man.
Man, right on. Appreciate it. You know, I am excited. This is a journey that I've never been a part of. Like, depression, you know, having to wrestle with the truth and versus lie in your psyche is a very new experience for me. My wife could tell you, I'm optimistic about everything. I'm like, we Gucci, God got us. If something need to be paid for or we need to build something, I'm like, God got us. But these last few years have injured your boy. And I can say that with full confidence that I am not the same person. But with hope, I can look at other people who have been through similar situations and how they speak about where they are at now is light years beyond of where they were. So my hope is that God is even using these sufferings to make me into a better person. You see what I'm saying? And make me increase my faith, make my faith stronger. So I'm just going through it and I ain't trying to rush it. And I don't want to stay in it too longer than I have to. I want to be authentic. I want it to do its perfect work. And hopefully I make some dope music out of it and hopefully people are encouraged.
Well, look, man, I hope this isn't out of bounds because I don't know you so much on a personal level, but mentally, physically, I hope there aren't any more hills and valleys. I hope you consistently stay in the light. You're able to keep doing what God intended you to do and you stick around, man.
Absolutely, man. That is my belief. You know, I got a beautiful wife, three children, nephew, and a lot of people who need me. You know, I mean, it's funny because I got this world, I don't display this world a lot on social media, but I am a Christian and I am involved in my local church. So I just don't talk the talk about following God. Like, that's my life. I'm an elder at my church. I'm on a board of elders at my church. But yet I'm also in the hood. Yet I'm also with dope fiends. Yet I'm also with baby mamas who got six kids. Yeah, I'm with dudes who then kill people. You see what I'm saying? I'm with musicians who smoke weed every day. I'm musicians who you know what I mean? I'm in the thick of it both. And that's the way I want my life to always be, so that I have good report with those of the household of faith, and I have good report with those who are trying to find a way, you know what I mean? Or may need a helping hand or just need to be loved like I do. You know what I mean? So, but I'm in a wheelhouse, bro. Like I believe I'm right where God needs me and wants me. And the future
is
bright.
Is there anything that, you know, I missed out on the music? Maybe any dates that people need to look out for? I know there's Things Below and the Anti-Hero.
Yes.
I'll give you the floor.
My newest single called Anti-Hero. And it is a single that's a part of a larger work called Things Below that will be dropping in November. So follow me at Courtney Orlando Instagram. Follow me at Courtney Lando without the O-R. On Twitter, because it's taken, but I'm still trying to get that unlocked. And Facebook, Courtney Orlando. So you may see somebody call me JR. I may call myself JR. That's because I still go by JR as a nickname, and it's my producer name. So a lot of times you'll see produced by JR and not produced by Courtney Orlando.
Yeah, not a problem. And it's funny what you just told me is like, aside from the music, I'm teaching kids, I'm in the streets, I'm in the church. Based on your audio journals, You disclose that you were a person who had become secluded, someone who had stopped sharing their life. I knew that wasn't Instagram. It was probably your kids, your wife, your church. So I'm glad that, I was able to get a slice of your life with me and kind of share some of your story with my listeners. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Right on. I appreciate it, bro. I appreciate it. I thank you for what you're doing. Like, it's excellent. Your Instagram page is fresh. You know what I mean? And so I hope this thing takes off, man. And people can continue to learn the stories of these bedroom Beethovens.
Appreciate the love, man.
Yeah.